Well, I don't know if you can ever say you have routine calls in law enforcement, but I know just, you know, a person like myself, when I listen to scanner traffic, I hear a lot of, you know, calls for batteries, domestic disputes, disturbances, things of that nature. And I guess the situation in Fulton County, does it, I guess, A, hit a little closer to home, and two, kind of put in perspective how really dangerous and volatile these calls can turn out, especially in rural counties?
Right. It's definitely a tragedy with the killing of Deputy Chisholm in Fulton County. My understanding, I don't have any direct knowledge of the circumstances of the call, but what's being reported is that he was responding to a simple battery and a disturbance complaint in a rural area in a county, you know, fairly similar to ours. Both, you know, a simple battery is just a misdemeanor offense, and that response where he was responding to provide a service to that victim that ended up resulting in his death. So it definitely does hit close to home. It's, you know, terrible when a person who devotes his life, as Deputy Chisholm seemingly has, as a paramedic, a firefighter, and a deputy sheriff, loses his life, and of course the loss of his family and friends and coworkers suffer, all in the attempt to, you know, stand up for a victim of a potentially a simple battery. It does, you know, really hit home in that, you know, the necessity for us to always be vigilant, and hopefully the public understands that that vigilance that deputies sometimes exhibit isn't meant to be rude or offensive, but, you know, things like this really sort of hit in our mind that even what seems to be the simplest call may not be, and of course, as the person involved, you may understand the you know, your intent and that you're not a risk, but that deputy or that law enforcement officer that's responding can't assume that you're not a risk to them, because it's all too often happening, even in rural counties close to us, that, you know, what seems like a simple call turns into a life and death situation in a hurry.
Yeah, and I guess that's the interesting point you bring up. From a layman's perspective, how can you help a person like me that's not involved in law enforcement directly understand the capacity of the uncertainty that you're dealing with when you, I mean, each call that you receive and dispatch out, especially in those type of situations you explain, are uncertain. So how, I mean, how does one in that profession, or can you help the layperson understand, I guess, dealing with uncertainty? And I guess that's part of probably professional training of being a law enforcement officer.
Right. It's really difficult. If there was a simple way that I could, I guess, teach the public on, you know, how it is to be a law enforcement officer, it would be, you know, a fantastic thing, other than just asking the public to sort of use empathy, right? Put yourself in that responding officer's shoes, and make sure that you understand that person has to maintain control of the situation. You know, pay attention to where your hands are. Of course, your hands are the biggest threat to law enforcement. You can only shoot someone, stab someone, hit someone with your hands. So we're, you know, very strictly trained to pay attention to someone's hands, make sure they're not in someone's pockets. With that law enforcement officer requesting those things, that, you know, you keep your hands where we can see them, it isn't meant to be rude. It's not meant to be overly controlling, but your hands are what present the biggest risk to us. And if we see them and you are compliant with what we say, then, you know, that tenseness, that anxiety that the officer faces in that response can lessen and make the whole situation much better. But when a person is high emotionally charged, not high as in, you know, drug intoxication, but emotionally charged, they're often tense, and sometimes it's easier to be resistant than it is to be compliant for that officer, which just escalates things further can, you know, cause for a tense situation. So that's what I would ask, is just to, you know, be empathetic with that officer. They are a father, a brother, a son, and they want to make sure that they go home to their family as well. And it's a simple task by just being compliant and understanding that the deputy is not meaning to be, like I said, rude or harsh. It's just becoming a necessary evil to make sure we maintain control of every situation.
And I know that we're more times than not so accustomed to, hearing about the concerns of, if you're a Metro police officer, and the issues and challenges that they deal with concerning some of the violent, maybe neighborhoods or areas of urban settings. But from a rule standpoint, you know, responding to a secluded, rural, unincorporated area, a lot like what we deal with here in Mercer County, what are some of the specific challenges in responding to those type of calls when, let's face it, sometimes you're in the middle of nowhere, kind of on an island on your own? I assume that presents some different challenges too.
It does. With, you know, our staffing level, I worked hard to try and sort of equalize the coverage with the number of deputies that we have working each shift. But even in my best attempt to equalize that coverage and make that coverage sufficient, we only have a certain number of people to work with. So there are often times where there are only two deputies on duty to cover the whole county. And, of course, the county is 34 by 18 miles, which is a lot of space to cover. So as much as I don't like it, there are times where that deputy responds to complaints, just very similar complaints that Deputy Chisholm responded to, that don't on its face seem entirely risky, but may be. So the challenge is at that basis, that deputy, to, of course, know that their only backup or assistance may be, you know, 30 miles away, maybe on another call, and there might not be backup coming, to be vigilant and to be, you know, safe in their actions and tactically sound. At the same time, maintaining, you know, cooperation and understanding with the public. It's just a very fine line and a difficult thing to balance.
All right, and just one final thing here. I know the big concern, one of the big initial concerns with the legalization of the recreational marijuana, and I don't think that takes effect until officially January 1, 2020, you know, the impaired driving issue, because we know what, you know, driving under the influence of alcohol and what the challenge is responding to that, and now you have the legalization of recreational marijuana, which can lead to impaired driving. Is that a big concern or a big worry from a law enforcement standpoint with this new law coming into effect?
It is a concern. One of the, you know, main things that separates alcohol impairment with potential cannabis impairment is the ease at which we can ascertain that level of impairment with our standardized field sobriety testing, the very unique and recognizable odor of an alcoholic beverage, where cannabis, depending, of course, the odor of the plant itself and the odor of it burning is very unique and potent, you know, you can be under the influence and still not have those as obvious outward signs. Of course, you know, field sobriety testing can still be used, and luckily we have a drug recognition expert trained deputy who has received very extensive specialized training in being able to recognize drug impairment and being able to identify the specific drug that's causing the impairment. So I'm sure we'll be using his expertise in greater amounts. But as everything with law enforcement and the laws, you know, things are constantly changing, and we must, as law enforcement officers, evolve to those changes and learn the new requirements and be able to, you know, effectively administer that law in the real world. So there is concern there for sure, but hopefully we can, you know, figure out what exactly the new laws mean in real life and be able to implement them in an effective way.